investigation. Yeah.
We're
hey, Phil, we got a roll. I'm 30 seconds away from the news.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Have a good night.
Yeah. Oh, you too.
Bye now. Bye. Thanks, everybody. We're done. We'll be back tomorrow night. Mike Malloy's not live this evening, so no reason not to hang around for Strictly Confidential if you were inclined to listen elsewhere. Try out our good friend Peter. Now, news is next. This is The Horn. Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. In a San Francisco federal court, injured war veterans filed a class action lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. They say the VA broke the law by denying them treatment and disability benefits when they returned from Iraq and Afghanistan. The suit calls for broad changes at the VA. In Baghdad, a roadside bomb killed a U.S. soldier over the weekend. The Pentagon says 54 American troops have been killed in July. Northeast of Baghdad, coalition forces continue a blockade of a small town where Shiite gunmen are holed up. It's the third day of the standoff, and residents inside say they're running out of food and water. In Afghanistan, four American soldiers died from a roadside bomb blast. Two NATO soldiers died in other violence. Also in Afghanistan, authorities are negotiating for the return of 23 South Koreans and a German hostage abducted last week by the Taliban. The militants demand freedom for the same number of Taliban prisoners and the withdrawal of German and South Korean troops. Former British Prime Minister Tony Blair is in Jerusalem for his first visit as envoy to the Middle East. His mission is to revitalize peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians. Top-level meetings begin tomorrow between Iran and the U.S. to discuss the declining security situation in Iraq. It'll be only the second such diplomatic summit between the two countries in nearly 30 years. Inspectors from the U.N.'s Nuclear Watchdog Agency will investigate the radiation leak at Japan's largest nuclear power plant. A major earthquake last week resulted in a fire and a leak of radioactive water. Re-elected yesterday, Turkey's prime minister vowed to battle Kurd separatists and continue to lobby for acceptance into the EU. During the campaign, the Muslim-based ruling party vowed to maintain Turkey's secular laws and culture. The British Royal Air Force rescued hundreds of people in central England, stranded by the nation's worst flooding in 60 years. Heavy rains continue to dangerously swell rivers, including the Thames. Fierce storms continue to pummel China as well, causing flooding and landslides. The two-month-old rainy seasons resulted in more than 400 deaths. Texans are also cleaning up after a weekend of heavy rain that caused flooding in south and central areas of that state. This is Quality News Network.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
At the International Space Station, astronaut Clayton Anderson jettisoned an obsolete camera and a half-ton ammonia tank into space. NASA said it had no choice and most of the debris will burn up as it enters Earth's atmosphere. More than 5,000 delegates from 130 countries are meeting in Australia for the world's largest conference on HIV and AIDS. On the agenda, studies indicating circumcision in heterosexual men may reduce infection by as much as 60%. A new study shows that people who drink more than one diet soda a day have the same risks for heart disease as those downing regular sodas loaded with sugar. Researchers had expected to see a difference and say more study is required. Bumblebee Seafoods has recalled more than 80 brands of canned chili, beef stew, and corned beef hash following reports of botulism. Also taken off shelves was Natural Balance dog food. And publishers say the newly released Harry Potter book flew off store shelves, becoming the fastest-selling book in history. Potter's latest adventure in the Deathly Hallows sold more than 8.3 million copies in the U.S. alone in its first 24 hours. Light sweet crude is trading at $74.98 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 106 points at 13,957. The NASDAQ closed up 3, and the S&P up 7. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 20 of Strictly Confidential. I'm your loyal host, Peter Godbold, and welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you're going to find links to all of the guests, as well as to our chat room, and the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. Again, that's strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Our toll-free call-in line is 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. Or you can use the same number translated into digits as 877-443-2366. If you have a unlimited long-distance calling plan, please use that, and you'll save the network a few cents. And that's at 304-653-3333. That call is to West Virginia, 304-658-3333. And again, if there's a guest that you'd like to hear on this program, just drop me a note. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I'll do my very best to have them on the show. You are appreciated, and I do listen to you. I missed you guys this weekend, but I had a wonderful weekend, really did. The Saturday, brother-in-law and I went through phase one of getting that tree out of the way. If you'll recall, it's, you know, well, I'm always either having a house dropped on me or a tree. Anyway, we went through phase one. Sunday, I went to MCC again, and that was wonderful. I saw something that really touched me. A woman went up to sing, and along with her, she was a spectator. She did an old gospel song called I've Got More to Go to Heaven For. But what touched me was her 70, looked to be about 70, 75-year-old tottering father went up with her to play the piano for her while she sang the song. And it was just amazing to me to see that this lesbian woman singing in front of the church with her father playing the piano. It really touched me. Boy, those PFLAG people are making a difference, are they not? And you ought to stop by their site. We had a guest from PFLAG here recently, and that was great fun. Tonight's guest is Glo Ross, who is a New York City Social Justice Fellow, and she's going to be representing Fierce tonight. Fierce is a community organization for transgender, lesbian, gay, bisexual, two-spirit, queer, and questioning youth of color in New York City. And they're dedicated to building power in the communities and taking on things like transphobia, homophobia, racism, ethnic conflict, gender bias, ageism, the spread of HIV. What drew me to this group and prompted me to get in touch with them and thank them so much for joining us was they are directly related in a huge way to two stories that we've done recently on this network. If you recall the lesbian biker gangs, we had great fun with that. We went through the spiel that Bill O'Reilly did with the lies about 150 lesbian gangs in Washington, D.C. alone, and they were breaking into homes and stealing your children. I think they were stealing little girls. And he went on at great length. I think we even played some audio of Bill O'Reilly ranting on about that. Later, we also covered what WorldNet Daily had to say about that situation. As you know, WorldNet Daily is an anti-gay, anti-anything progressive, so right-wing Christian organization. And WorldNet Daily went on for, 8-9 pages, closely typed text, backing up's the wrong word, echoing every word that Bill O'Reilly said as if it were the absolute truth. So, as so many of the right-wing fundamentalists do, they only get their news from the Christian Broadcasting Network, CBN, or places like WorldNet Daily. So they believe that everything that Bill O'Reilly said was the absolute truth. Another story that we did recently was regarding the pier. I have it here in front of me, the West Village. I'm so sorry. I'm from down south. And people in New York are laughing at me right now because I didn't know the name was West Village. Had to look it up. But in any case, the West Village Pier and the attempt to, quote, clean out GLBT individuals from going to that pier who were not from that neighborhood. We talked in great length one evening recently about the fact that there is a university, don't recall the name of it, nearby, and in fact, a lot of the folks there in the West Village are attempting to get these folks out of there. I think it's so important that we hear from groups like this because, you know, I'm not sure how much support they have, if any other gay organizations and lesbian organizations are working to help them. They apparently are self-organized, and they're facing a huge battle to do what they do, and I admire them for doing what they do. And so, with no more ado, I'm welcoming Glo Ross to Strictly Confidential. Good evening, Glo.
Thank you for having Fierce on with you. Thank you for inviting me. Well, good evening to you.
Thank you.
And your listeners.
Thank you. Thank you to you also. Glo, when we first began talking, I emailed you because I had hijacked your PSA.
Right.
You have at your site, which is Fierce NYC. That's FIERCENYC.org, and I recommend that you go there and have a look. There is a PSA. They've done a very good job with it. It's actually a video PSA, but I captured the audio and began running it on Strictly Confidential because I was struck by the quality of it, and also because they were speaking from the heart. And so I wrote Fierce a letter saying, yeah, I hope you don't hate me, but I like stole your PSA, guys. they didn't sue me or anything, which I was pleased to hear.
That's what it's for. It's the play, so play it all.
Well, we do. We often run it. I get so long-winded, we don't always take a break 2 or 3 times an hour like we should, so but it gets played at least twice, once or twice during the show. Glo, can you bring us up to speed? Let me explain. Our audience, we have a large number of straight listeners.
Right.
In fact, people as far away as the Netherlands are listening to us right now. All of them are progressive people, but they're not exposed to community in any way that, you know, is meaningful. They're finding out a lot about us on this network. In fact, in our chat room, I sometimes get questions. People, the media tells them that all gay people and lesbians are rich because, you know, we're dual income, no kid. You know the drill.
Right, yeah.
And you so know that, right? So could you tell us what's going on in the West Village and the way you got started? We're just hungering for knowledge. We have a large number of GLBT folks also.
Right, right. Yes. Well, Fierce started back in 2000. Basically out of the need to organize lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth of color, and youth in general. And just sort of to even back up, I mean, you talked about the importance of the West Village in New York, and the Christopher Street and Christopher Street Pier, which is sort of this, you know, if you go to California and you ask people if they know about the Christopher Street Pier, they'll say, hey, yeah, that's right, you know, that's the gay spot, that's the gay area. So it's just sort of known as this sort of, you know, grouping and community space for LGBT, the LGBT community, which really came out, I think Fierce sort of thinks, around the Stonewall Rebellion, which happened in 1969, where you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and especially transgender women were at the forefront of battling police brutality and police sort of entering into the bars and the clubs in the area and saying, you're not wearing the gender-appropriate clothing, and would therefore arrest a bunch of people and harass them. So that happened back in 1969. And so, you know, you fast forward up into the 90s, and this has sort of become this place where, you know, the 80s and the 90s were, you know, this is where LGBT community, we feel safe. This is where we create community. Oftentimes, especially as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth of color, because, you know, not only are we facing at home the threat and the fear of violence, either by coming out to our families and not being accepted, or even at school and not having it be a safe space at school for us, we're pushed out of our homes. And oftentimes go to the West Village and to Christopher Street and the piers as a way to find a second home and a second family. So, you know, the Christopher Street pier and the West Village in general has just sort of been this magnet of to LGBT youth and to LGBT folks in general as a safe space. So it has a rich historical culture where people find support networks, they find resources, you know, to testing, HIV testing and other medical needs. They find resources and links to housing needs, emergency shelter services. So this is where, you know, this is why LGBT youth are at the pier. And Fierce's work revolves around keeping that a safe space for LGBT youth in general. And it's being threatened. Like you said, a lot of people don't want us there. And, you know, if we look at what happened back in 1998, there was a process where the city wanted to make more parkland, the city of New York, and said that, you know, we don't have any money to do that. So let's give money, or let's, you know, get a private corporation to sort of fund that. Basically from Battery Park, if you know New York, from Battery Park all the way up to 59th Street on the west side, became under the control of the Hudson River Park Trust back in 1998, who then took Christopher Street Pier back in 2000 and redeveloped it. Basically, you know, it was a rundown pier with dilapidated, you know, pilings, and but people found home there and people found community there. But the Hudson River Park Trust took that pier and made it into a site of beauty. I mean, it has a fountain, it has nice grass now. It looks amazing, it looks beautiful, but unfortunately it wasn't developed for LGBT youth. It was developed for, you know, another community in mind and not for our community. So through that process, they also put in a 1 a.m. curfew on the pier where there didn't used to be, and pushed a lot of people out. So 1 a.m. would come through, and, you know, if you'd been hanging out there and finding community and building community, at 1 a.m. the Park Enforcement Patrol would come and kick you off and sort of, you know, put you out into the streets where you would face LGBT youth of color, definitely face a lot of police harassment for various reasons, and especially harassment from the West Village residents because they do see us as, you know, bringing down their property value. They see us as leftovers. We've been called leftovers. We've been called, you know, so many other things I can't even repeat here. But we're just sort of seen as leftovers of a time that is no longer relevant. And we want to say it is relevant. We come here for a reason. And public space shouldn't just be for those who can afford to live in the West Village. But
well, so then you're saying to me then that the GLBT community that lives there, now we're talking about moneyed folks who live there are upset with you because of an ethnic issue of it seems hard to believe that how quickly people forget their roots when they get a little money in their pocket.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely it's an issue of, you know, who has right to a space if you don't own land or own property or own business in that area. And unfortunately, that question of ownership and property ownership comes down to a question of who has opportunities to you know, become moneyed, who has opportunities to be able to rent in that area. Just crazy rent. I mean, you're talking about thousands of dollars a month to rent out an apartment. And then, you know, unfortunately, yes, it does come down to the question of race. And, you know, it's nothing to hide. It's nothing to beat around. But, yeah, the majority of people of color don't have the economic opportunities that would allow them to have, you know, to own property and to have that be the sort of requirement to use the space is sort of ludicrous. It's a public space. It should be for
all. Is it like their houses or their apartments are, like, backed up to the pier? Are you right under somebody's window? What is their problem?
well, there's the piers. The piers jut out into the Hudson. And then there's this West Side Highway, right? So it's a big highway that goes all the way up the west side of Manhattan that sort of separates the piers from the housing and the apartment. If you sort of, like, picture the layout of the land, you have the piers, you have the highway, you have Christopher Street, which, you know, a lot of our folks walk down after they leave the pier to go to the subway or, you know, to go get food or to find bathroom. And so when they walk down that street, they're faced with residents, they're faced with police, they're faced with, you know,
So it's like no man's land, but between where you're coming from, like, I'm reading, like, Newark and places, it's like a bridge there, but the troll that doesn't want you to get across. Is that the idea? They try to stop you as you try to leave the park or enter the park?
There's definitely been proposals put out by the West Village community to the sort of local governing structure called the Community Board 2, where they said, you know, we actually don't want LGBT youth to come down Christopher Street, so let's put barricades on the street so that when the pier closes, they have no option to go down Christopher Street, but they have to either go up a few miles to 14th Street or down a few miles to Houston Street. We don't want them in our neighborhood at all. And so we were like, oh.
You'd have to walk? Have to walk these few miles? There's no transit?
Walk.
I take it there's no transit.
Right.
Yes, that's what
right.
I figured. That's what I figured, yeah.
And you mentioned the university that's very near in the area, NYU, New York University. And it's sort of, when you think about the critiques and the problems that the residents are putting out there about the presence of LGBT youth in the area, a lot of what they're saying is, you know, there's so much noise. There's so much noise from all these people coming off the pier at 1 a.m. There's so much, you know, I can't get sleep. And what we've offered, what Fierce has offered through a proposal that we put out there a year or so ago, is that, well, the only reason why there's a bunch of noise at one time at 1 a.m. when the pier closes is because the pier is closing at 1 a.m. when it never used to. But if you bend the curfew, if you let that go, then people can come and go as they please and trickle in and trickle out, and it's not a whole mass of people coming down the street at one time.
Well, certainly that makes sense. You know, if it was a club, when the club closed, everybody would have to go. Same deal with the park.
And, you know, Peter, and that's the thing we brought up is, you know, there's you know, public intoxication from NYU students. There's bars all over the area. There's music. There's, there's so much that's going on.
Funny.
But who's getting policed? Who's getting stopped by the police? Who's getting told that they can't be here, that they have to keep it moving? So it's unfortunately the folks who, you know, are oftentimes homeless. It's our folks who don't have money to frequent, you know, the establishments in the area. It's our folks who, you know, are too young to frequent the establishments in the area and are just, you know, really looking to, you know, find another place to stay and to sleep, because they're being kicked off the pier. So, yeah.
I see. Well, in reading through some of your material, I understand that there was the option of 4 a.m. by closing the park at 4 a.m., which, by the way, that's to me because 4 a.m. is almost dawn anyway. Why not?
It was our compromise.
What's up with that? Why do they have to close the park at all? If there are lights there, I mean, what's the deal?
Right. I mean, it's an interesting question. And it's when we get into the sort of politics of development, where the Hudson River Park Trust owns this land, this parkland. And essentially, it doesn't need to close at 1 a.m. They say that it needs to close at 1 a.m. because they want to go along with, you know, calling it a park. And because they call it a park, you have to follow park rules and regulations of New York City. And pretty much for the most part, all parks in New York City close at 1 a.m. But that sort of discounts the sort of cultural, historical roots and presence of our community and thinking about, you know, what people actually find here. Like, this is home for many people. This is a safe space for many people. And we sort of said, you know what, that's real. It is hard to sleep when a lot of people are walking out in the street. But that shouldn't mean that LGBT youth are getting policed and pushed out of the West Village at all. So what we came with was a proposal that says, okay, first of all, the bathrooms on the pier need to be open until the park closes. Because as it stands now, they close at 8 p.m. When the park closes at 1. So people are, you know, LGBT youth are going out into the West Village and trying to, you know, find a bathroom. And if they don't have money to purchase, you know, good services from the establishment that they're trying to use the bathroom in, oftentimes they're, you know, engaging in public urination, which they get arrested for. So it's sort of like, okay,
right.
That was in our proposal. We also put out that we need affordable food on the pier for the same reason the bathrooms are there. Like, folks are going and they're trying to access McDonald's and they're trying to access, you know, cheaper food options out in the West Village, and they're running into so many problems. Why not have affordable food on the pier where they're at? And then we also put forward having a 4 a.m. closing time as a compromise to say, you know, the option isn't to shut down the pier at 10 p.m., which some people were suggesting. It's not to make it earlier, but it's to recognize that this is a space where people are going to come anyways, because this is their space. This is, you know, historically been so, where they find to be safe and where they want to build community. So let's honor that and let's respect that by sort of compromising in the closing time. So.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me. It seems obstacles are very arbitrary. You close the restrooms, so you leave folks looking for a restroom, and they have to go out and look for food. Then, in addition to that, you close the park at 1 a.m., so then everyone is forced to leave at the same time. I take it there are hundreds of people that go to this park?
Yeah, definitely.
And so you've suddenly got hundreds of people, we're talking about young people, and young people are, by definition, if I recall, when I was young once, by definition, noisy. So it seems like they're stacking it in every possible way to make you the villain here.
Right. I mean, that's the, you know, and it's sort of, you could stack it up, but, you know, what really sort of undercuts it all is that the needs of LGBT youth are not being incorporated. They weren't incorporated into how the development process went for the Christopher Street Pier. They weren't asked, the LGBT youth were not asked, like, what does this pier need to be in order to meet your needs, because this is going to serve your community just as it is going to serve the West Village community. So it's sort of a larger question of around, you know, when public space is developed, whose interests are at hand, whose interests are considered. And oftentimes it's not the people who are homeless, it's not the people who have limited access to, you know, formal economy jobs. So it's just sort of a larger question, at least for us at Fierce, to think about. You know, the Hudson River Park Trust is going to be developing Pier 40, which is right next to Christopher Street Pier, very soon. And the plans that they have in front of them are to potentially develop this pier into what's been called a Vegas on the Hudson, right? So the headquarters for Cirque du Soleil, high-end boutiques, high-end shops, high-end restaurants, things that, you know, don't serve the community overall, West Village community in general, but especially don't serve the needs of LGBT youth who are a part of that community. So,
well,
I think the larger question for us is to insert our needs into the development process, what happens in the West Village, too.
Well, I'm looking through material that I gathered, and your group is very active in terms of I don't know if these are demonstrations or parades, but in other words, is this the only way that you can be heard? Are people really silencing you to the point of not paying any attention to you in meetings? That that you're forced to. I mean, this is an uncomfortable thing for you to have to go out in the streets and protest and carry the signs. You know, nobody wants to do that. Everybody wants to just be accepted and live their lives. So it's got to be a strain on you guys. Do they not give you any credibility at all in this?
I think that's one of the great things about our campaign is that we've become a legitimate force in the West Village. So we've been going to the community board hearings that sort of decide what happens in the West Village. And we have been seen. I mean, just recently the community board just passed a resolution talking about the bathroom, talking about affordable food options on the pier, and saying, you know, we commend Fierce for their hard work. Last summer we were working with the Manhattan Borough President's Office around trying to get some of those same demands pushed through. So I think in our being strategic and our building those relationships with, you know, not only the community board, but the West Village community itself, and trying to, you know, really propose some concrete responses and solutions to the problems that we're all facing. I think we've been able to, you know, take it step by step and be a part of the dialogue so that when people are saying, well, what's going on in the West Village, they're also thinking of, well, what's going on with LGBT youth, what's going on with Fierce, what's happening there. So, you know, it very much is about taking to the streets, but at the right time. And I think Fierce has sort of learned in its own campaign work how, you know, we need to be strategic and we need to sort of sit down at the table and think about not just the immediate, you know, demands of give us this now, but how can we change the structures by which things are decided about in the West Village so that, you know, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, we can look at the very decisions that are being made and they're already incorporating the needs of LGBT youth, so that LGBT youth don't have to come out and mobilize to the, you know, to the streets. And we will if we need to, but we're really trying to change the structure of it so that, you know, LGBT youth and LGBT community in general, LGBT people of color, are part of this community and recognized as part of the West Village, even though we don't live here, even though we don't own businesses here, but that we come here as a part of our cultural heritage and trying to build community.
This is the wonderful thing about the communication that's happening in the GLBT community, especially since the development of the Internet. We seem to becoming more and more active so that kids that come along before us don't have to go through the same problems. It's almost like we're raising the next generation of GLBT kids. Do you know? We're fighting for them. It's interesting. It's a family thing. You just about have to be one of the GLBT community to understand it. Really, it's very much like family.
Definitely.
Are any of the other organizations helping you? You know, there are so many gay organizations in New York City. I saw a handbook that was just amazing. That went on and on with resources and. You know, is anybody helping you?
Definitely. I mean, we have a lot of allies. You know, most notably the Audre Lorde Project based in Brooklyn. You know, we talk a lot with the LGBT Community Center in New York, Manhattan, with Generation Q out in Queens. And then, you know, I think one of the great things about Fierce as well is that we realize that this fight, you know, for LGBT youth and our rights here in the West Village is not just a fight about in the West Village about our rights. Like, we're definitely connecting it to, you know, rights around immigration. We're definitely connecting it to rights around the war. We're definitely connecting it to other communities out there. So I think a lot of our allies, too, are, you know, allies that you probably wouldn't necessarily assume them to be. So we're working with the South Asian community. We're working with, you know, the Chinese community down in Chinatown who is facing an incredible amount of gentrification and displacement just like we are in the West Village. A lot of our work is sort of, you know, bringing the LGBT perspective and LGBT framework to issues that are broader, social justice issues. And we are able to do that by linking with other organizations doing that work, too. So, I mean,
well, you're absolutely right. The list of people that you just brought up to me is a surprise to me. I would have never expected that diversity in folks that are giving you a hand.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I think New York is sort of the site for, if you ever want to think about gentrification, if you ever want to think about displacement of people, especially people of color, you think about New York, you think about what's been happening in the Lower East Side, you think about what's been happening in Chinatown, what's been happening in Harlem, what's been happening in Brooklyn, and sort of, you know, it doesn't just, sort of gentrification displacement doesn't just have, you know, a race component to it. It's definitely about public space, definitely about, you know, who gets access to what space, and we're definitely a part of that conversation, so...
Well, this thing that happened, the attack, there was an attack, this goes back to August of 06, and when there were some lesbians walking through the West Village on their way homes, we did this story on this program a few weeks ago that our regular listeners remember. And the thing is that three were just sentenced, and one to 11 years,
right,
basically, for defending herself. And this is the point at which O'Reilly picked up the story as best we can tell and started talking about a nationwide epidemic of lesbian gangs. But this man was, as I understand it, throwing cigarettes. He grabbed and pulled their hair. He was saying that he was going to make them straight. Any number of things that a lesbian just does not want to hear from any man. Right. Can you tell us more about this situation? It was very disturbing, and in fact, we were upset to hear about this story when we did it a little while ago. We only know the O'Reilly perspective, and the fact that it isn't true doesn't mean that we don't really know what is true. Can you tell us about that? I know you're involved.
Right. I think to even back up, I mean, you know, it's almost a year ago when this incident happened, but even to back up 4 years ago, back to 2003. Where these girls that were just sentenced in this case were friends of another girl, Sakia Gunn, who in 2003 was murdered in a similar incident, hanging out in New Jersey, in Newark, New Jersey, and was approached by a man, you know, said very similar things. And Sakia Gunn was like, you know, hey, I'm a lesbian, this is not for me. And she was killed. And these girls knew her. And so it's sort of this backdrop of, you know, you're faced with this situation, and, you know, what does your mind think of when your friend, who you knew, you know, 4 years previous, or at this point 2006 when this incident happened 3 years earlier, was killed in a similar situation. You're right. These women were approached. There's seven of them who were approached in like 2 a.m. on August 18th back in 2006, and they defended themselves, and through a process of, you know, the legal process, legal proceedings, the case proceedings, were basically found guilty. Four of them were found guilty. One of them getting, like you said, 11 years in prison for defending themselves. He survived. He had a laceration in his stomach area, and you know, he's out and about, and you know, last I heard, he was in the West Village again trying to create trouble. which is nothing to laugh at, but I think in the broader thing for us is to think about, you know, I was there in the courtroom when, you know, they were being cross-examined and whatnot, and the prosecutor asked, you know, one of the young women, well, why didn't you call the police? You know, if this event was so serious and this man was so threatening, why didn't you call the police?
We already know the answer to that, that the community is constantly harassed by the police.
And that's
my thought.
Right, and I think that that's a form of violence in itself. I mean, we really need to ask our question, ask this question of, well, who's being protected? I mean, there's got to be something to say about these young women who are obviously harassed and obviously, you know, threatened by this man. And what do you do? Well, I mean, what options do you have at the fact that you can't call the police and feel safe about what they might do, because they might turn on you? And it's just sort of a catch-22 of, you do what, you know, I feel like I would have done in this situation, is defend myself and sort of look what the system is saying, you know?
Well, obviously the man is deranged. He's coming after a group of women, not just one. He's obviously not right. It's just astounding to me to even hear he did this. I would have been, personally, you'd think that just the numbers would have prevented him from it, but apparently he had such dislike for right. for lesbian women. What was his problem? Does anybody know?
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. I don't even know. I don't even want to speculate what he was doing, what was going through his head. But I think what hasn't even been out in the sort of the public dialogue is that, you know, if you look at the video, the surveillance tape of this fight, of this incident, rather, you see these two men walking by and jumping into this altercation and attacking Dwayne Buckle, the man himself. And so if you step back and sort of think about, well, what does that situation tell you? If Dwayne Buckle was being so severely beaten and so severely threatened by seven young women, you would think that two men walking by would sort of protect this man from these women, but they didn't. They protected these women from this man, and started, you know, having altercation with him. And so it's just sort of like, even looking at that, like, what was the read on the whole situation? But unfortunately, it's happened. You know, they're upstate right now. We're working with the families and trying to get them support, you know, either through writing letters or sending care packages, but also through financial support and holding fundraisers for them so that they can get through the legal fees and get through the cost of actually traveling up to see their loved ones. But yeah, I mean, definitely go on our website if you have more, if you want to know more information on what you can do to sort of help out with this case and help the families out.
Good, because that's such a terrible need. You know, to be locked away 11 years, 3 years, even 8 months.
Right.
For defense was outrageous. Now, what I recall from doing this story before is apparently there was a knife involved, but the knife was never, you said that he had a cut. Apparently the knife was never analyzed by the crime investigation, and apparently there were no visible traces of blood on this knife. Is this correct, too?
That's what I heard in the testimony.
And and also,
yeah.
It's just astounding. And then you had a couple of men jump into this scene too to help defend the lesbian women. Who knows if he had the knife?
Right.
Maybe that was the knife. If nobody ever established that. There's so many. So basically, had this been a white woman, and had she been heterosexual, and had she been accosted in the parking lot of the nearby grocery store, or any number of places that community considers quote respectable, not that you know walking down the West Village is not respectable. I'm just trying to draw an analogy here. That woman would have gotten off and gotten a reward. I mean, basically, she would have been lifted up by every newspaper in the area, and this could have never happened.
Right. I think your read on that is for the most part right. Yes.
Well, yeah. You know, also, not only did O'Reilly situation and this sort of, I'm understanding now that local headlines had knife wielding lesbian. It's apparently, all of the news media jumped on this as a gang of lesbians. Does that just about sum it up?
For the most part, yes. For the most part, I mean, there's been some sort of neutral media coverage out there, but for the most part, especially when it happened back in August, and the more immediate news coverage of the situation was described them as, you know, a gang of lesbians, a wolf pack.
Right, and, not and, from the area.
Right.
Of color.
And it just sort of, it, you know, it really spoke to, you know, just the lack of analysis that our media has around, you know, why the situation existed and occurred in the first place. Like, what sexism, what homophobia exist in our society for it to even occur in this way. And it went straight into sort of criminalizing and demonizing these young women for being who they are, of one, and then defending that against, you know, a male advancement, a man's advancement, sexual offerings. So, unfortunately, the media...
Well, offering kind word of you to use.
Exchanging pleasantries, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're no fans of the media at the Head on Radio Network. We know it for what it is, a corporate controlled entity, and which is basically in bed with the Bush administration. You know, don't get me started.
Right.
But this is unbelievable. Had it happened to as I say, a white woman in the parking lot of a grocery store or whatever, this would have had an entirely different spin, and she would have been lifted up as a hero.
Right.
There is absolutely no question about this. Going back to the peer, you've mentioned a couple of times HIV and the spread of, you know, being tested and the spread of STDs. Are there people there on the peer that from the community that, you know, do HIV testing and do referrals and all that stuff? How does that fit in?
I think that's a great question. I mean, before the peers were redeveloped, there was a lot of outreach on the peers, a lot to sort of help keep the community safe and educate folks around what was going on, especially with the spread of HIV. Unfortunately, when the peers were redeveloped back in 2001, and they were reopened in 2003 because it was essentially a private property, the Hudson River Park Trust said to the service providers that in order for them to park their service vans on the pier, that they were going to need to pay a $25,000 fee, which, if you know anything about service providers, it's quite a big bill, especially because your budget is so small and you need to stretch what you already have to just sort of provide the services that you need. So one of the victories that we got out of our campaign was to have that fee waived, essentially saying that this is a service that can't be compromised for our community. It's a necessity. It needs to be on the pier because that's where our folks are, and it's something that needs to be provided. So there's a lot of different organizations out there, namely the Callen Lord Health Center with the health outreach to teens van, who does a lot of great testing and information distribution out there on the pier, and a lot of other different service providers that have been able to access the space because of that fee being waived. So they're definitely doing great work out there, and continue to do so. But then on top of that, you know, they also do receive a great deal of harassment from the West Village residents who see them as doing a disservice to the community by being there and being available to LGBT youth especially. So, you know, it's good work. They're doing it, and we're glad they're out there, and we're glad that the fee has been waived, and we can claim that as a victory. But we can't say that it's definitely easy to do, and that they're welcome in that space. But for the most part, you know, they're there. They're doing their work. Okay, can you hear me, Glo? Glo, can you hear me? Yes.
Okay, excellent. I'm glad. I wasn't sure. Somehow or another, the fact that we can even do this sort of radio is really amazing. We have hosts as far away as Australia, and every once in a while there's an internet glitch where one or the other of us can lose audio, and I just lost lost you for a second. And I had just asked you the question about this guy, if he was charged with anything, and you may have answered that. I don't know. Did you address that?
No, I didn't. Dwayne Buckle, no, he has not been charged with anything. Not at all.
That's just amazing to me. That's just amazing to me. Well, you know, you guys apparently have been around, what, 6, 7 years? Is that right?
Yeah, 7 years. Yeah.
And you, and basically, from a group of young people, dare I say disadvantaged young people, maybe financially and culturally, because of the way society looks down on youth in general, and you've managed to pull this into a for real organization with PSAs, and you're able to attend to attend meetings. I just got to hand it to you. You guys have got it going on.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think that's sort of, you know, you think about the sort of lack of youth, not the lack, but the sort of disinvestment in general in our society from youth leadership. And I think that's one of the things that we're here at Fierce are trying to, like, battle against is, you know, LGBT youth of color can lead. We can take things in our hands and say what we want. And we know how to get it, and we know how to be strategic. And we also know how to build coalitions and work with other people and build our own leadership. So I think that's sort of one of the main mission goals that we're trying to accomplish here is to increase the leadership of LGBT youth of color. And we're glad that we can do it because we know that we can. And if we can't, then it's just not going to happen. So, yeah,
well,
it's definitely a priority.
Well, you just amazed me. I noticed that at fiercenyc.org there is a donate button, and I encourage those of you who can to stop by there because these people have worked very hard and they deserve your support. Also, at their site is information about helping the women who were sentenced to prison from all the way up to 11 years for just defending themselves. And, Glo, I want you to know that that you are welcome back on this show at any time. You do not have a set interview. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call the toll-free number, and I will put you on the air. I want you to feel that this is that you are welcome here at any time and to use this as a vehicle for getting out the word for anything that you need to say.
Well, thank you, Peter. Thank you for having us on, for helping us sort of get our message out there. And definitely encourage folks to visit the website, like you said. So hopefully we'll be hearing from you again and from your listeners soon. So thank you.
Well, I hope you put out another PSA. I'm going to hijack it, you know.
Well, we are. We are on it. It's coming. We're going to get it right to you once we're done.
Okay, that's great news. Unless there's... I don't want to let you go away unless is there something that we have missed that you wanted to get out this evening, because I've really kept you on the pier and I've kept you on the women who were locked up for defending themselves. Is there another area you wanted to talk about before we go tonight?
No, I mean I really just wanted to let your listeners know about, you know, the basic gist of what we do and why we do it and sort of the historical context for all that. So I appreciate being here, and I appreciate your listeners listening. And, you know, hopefully we can keep you updated on our work and the work that we're doing, and, you know, keep building the relationship that we've built. And definitely encourage folks to visit the website to learn more about it. But thank you for having us on.
Thank you for being with us this evening. You were an amazing guest, and I want to tell you too, I monitor the chat room during the guest calls. And that way I can get kind of a general barometer about how you're doing. They loved you. That's what they thought. Everybody's saying you're a wonderful guest. I just wanted you to know.
Thank
it's not
you.
Just okay,
thank
God
you.
Bless you, and have... Yes, ma'am, have a wonderful evening.
You too. Take care.
Okay, good night. Wow. Another another wonderful guest on Strictly Confidential. And, you know, it's not me, kids. It's you guys out there who are listening. You know, I would never have an opportunity to talk to these people if it were not for my wonderful listeners. You are very much appreciated, and I'm so pleased to have been able to have her with us. Now, that's what the younger generation is doing. They're doing something, and they're doing it well. They're doing it rather well to have held an organization together this long. And And apparently they're going. One quick thing I want to do before I neglect to do it here before the top of the hour. Most everyone has heard that Tammy Faye Baker has died, and I wanted to play you a very quick piece of audio. She was interviewed on Larry King, in case you haven't heard it, about her reaction to the gay community, and the clip is followed by her son talking about the fact that it was on her television program that the first patient was AIDS patient was ever on. Reagan at the time didn't even mention it. Tammy Faye really helped bridge the gap between the evangelical movement and gay churches, particularly these Metropolitan Community Church. Of course, that's now Reverend Elder Nancy Wilson, who is the moderator of MCC these days. Even if you're not a Christian or religious in any way, shape, or form, you can't deny that Tammy Faye Baker had an effect on our world. Tammy Faye died. She had cancer, and she died within 24 hours of this interview on Larry King. Her voice is very weak, and it doesn't sound, but she has a wonderful smile on her face, and the clip is followed by her son. It's very short. Agnes, if you'd run that, please.
Well, you know, when we lost everything, it was the gay people that came to my rescue, and I will always love them for that.
She stood up for people when it wasn't popular. She had one of the first people in the early 80s on Christian television with AIDS. I mean, Reagan didn't even mention the word AIDS during the 80s.
This is absolutely true, and that was her son speaking. And Tammy Faye, if you've not seen the movie The Eyes of Tammy Faye, it's a wonderful glimpse into her life. Apparently, she had colon cancer, and it had spread, and she was pretty much destroyed. This I have to do before the top of the hour also. Our dear friend Cossack from the chat room sent this. It's not to be overlooked. He's been in the lyrics to a song. Now, I won't sing it. I won't put you through that. But the song is sung to the tune of Ballad of the Green Beret, and I won't go through all the verses. But it's just fabulous. What it demonstrates so clearly is basically the only thing we know about the Christian right and the fundamentalists is they're not gay. I mean, honestly, do you know anything else? That's all they say. I'm not gay. We're not gay. Gay people are bad. I'm not gay. We're not gay. Imagine this sung to the tune of Ballad of the Green Beret. Bleeding wing nuts of the right, dastards hiding from the fight. Cellar trolls with much to say, that screeches one. No, we're not gay. I'll read another one. Trained to live off daddy's cash, when lies don't work, then talk some trash. In fear, they might just be that way. They scream real loud, but I'm not gay. This is amazing. Cossack, thank you for sending that. This is a treasure. And that's really so true. We basically know absolutely nothing about them except for the fact that they are not gay. Oh, my. What to do? What to do? What to do? Probably we should take a little break. We've been running for about an hour, and it's not quite top of the hour, but that's okay. We'll go ahead and run our top of the hour break, and I will see you guys in the flip. The phone number for calling in is 877, the number 4. Head on. This is Peter Godbold on Strictly Confidential.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support
support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
Hi, I'm V.
And I'm John.
And we're from Fierce, a community organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning youth of color in New York City.
For many years, the Christian Fellowship here has been a place for our community, a space where we can all go and be ourselves.
A space where healthcare providers can come and provide free HIV testing and information to other services.
However, these services and safe space are being threatened.
To become a member of Fierce and help keep our Christopher Pierce safe for queer and trans people, contact us at 646-336-6789 or visit our website at fiercenyc.org.
This is the Quality News Network. Top-level meetings start tomorrow between Iran and the U.S. to discuss Iraq. 90% of the insurgents in Iraq are sent in to carry out their attacks from neighboring Iran, Syria, and Saudi Arabia. English Prime Minister Gordon Brown said that he won't rule out military action against Iran. However, he'd rather see the utilization of sanctions against Tehran to halt its nuclear program. U.S. Ambassador to Iraq Ryan Crocker told a panel of U.S. legislators that al-Qaeda's role as the key disruptor in Iraq is to provoke ethnic or tribal retaliations by targeting all factions. They also target coalition troops in Iraq's police and military forces to demoralize them. But he reports the tide is shifting, with many Sunni tribes in the Anbar province rejecting al-Qaeda and cooperating with the Iraqi government. In Afghanistan, the Taliban has extended its deadline until tomorrow, Tuesday night, for authorities to release 23 Taliban prisoners in exchange for 23 South Korean aid workers taken hostage in an ambush last week. Almost 40 Taliban militants were killed by coalition forces over the weekend. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has ordered the expulsion of any foreign critics of his country. His speech came after the president of Mexico's ruling party criticized Chavez for seeking indefinite rule. Other critics have said that he's steering Venezuela down the path to 21st century socialism. Thousands of British people are being overwhelmed by the worst flooding England has seen since the end of the war. The rivers Tame and Severn are near overflow capacity. Fresh water for Gloucestershire's 350,000 residents is running out. Central and southern Texans are cleaning up after a weekend of flooding, too. An enormous wildfire in Idaho is threatening the homes of some 7,500 residents, as well as an Air Force training range. The sidewalk outside of the Atlanta Falcons training camp was the scene of a protest today to get them to get team officials to drop quarterback Michael Vick from its roster. Vick and three co-defendants will be arraigned Thursday in multiple counts involving pit bull fighting on Vick's property. In New Haven, Connecticut, illegal immigrants tomorrow will begin receiving ID cards permitting them to make use of city programs and open up bank accounts. This could pave the way for similar legislation across the U.S. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business next.
Hey, what's he doing?
What?
That guy is changing his oil in the street and letting it run right in the storm drain, which pollutes the bay. I totally wouldn't surf in that.
Dude, what can we do?
Call 1-800-CLEANUP to report anyone dumping oil, antifreeze, or paint in the street.
This way, fools like that can be fined.
Tell everyone to call 1-800-CLEANUP.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Traffic deaths fell to a five-year low across America in 2006. Factors contributing to the decline include strong law enforcement and better safety features on cars. Missouri's death rate showed the greatest decline, while Vermont had the highest increase. Motorcycle deaths went up for the ninth year in a row, and the death rate for alcohol-related crashes stayed the same. Grim words from the podium at the Global AIDS Conference underway in Sydney. Dr. Brian Gizzard, chairman of the British HIV Association, told the international delegates that, quote, HIV epidemic is essentially uncontrolled in Africa and Asia right now, end quote. The UN is aiming for universal coverage to combat HIV by 2010. The price of the pump is going down. A survey released just this afternoon shows that gasoline went down an average of 9 cents a gallon nationwide. Midwesterners are paying the least, averaging $2.96 a gallon, and Californians have the dubious honor of paying the most at an average of $3.12 a gallon. The Dow rallied back, not quite to the 14,000 mark it cracked on Thursday, but still high enough, 13,943. That was up 92 points. So the rally is back, and that's based on earnings and mergers and acquisitions. The S&P 500 gained 7.5. NASDAQ was up 3. Oil trading at 75 a barrel. More on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
And he's back. Riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential. A man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And welcome back to the second hour of Strictly Confidential. The telephone number is 877, the number 4, head on. That's 877, the number 4, head on. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. If you have a unlimited long-distance calling plan, we could use that to save the network of some money, and you could use 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. Welcome back. I'm so glad to have you with me this evening. Last hour's guest was amazing. That was I'm still looking through the information about her site going, wow. I'm going to do something I don't normally do. What I'm going to do, I don't normally follow a break with a music track, but this one I definitely want to run. It's less than 5 minutes, but it's a track that I don't want to miss in case we have a caller and we have some stories. I don't want to miss doing this. I came across this actually on MySpace. There's an artist there. His name is Don Harvey. Now, you can reach his site at myspace.com/Dr. Don Harvey. That's myspace.com/DrDonHarvey, Harvey. And Don started playing bass in 1965. He's played rock, blues, country and western, bluegrass. And basically Don got tired of playing other people's music and began writing his own. His songs have appeared on Bear Tracks 1 and Bear Tracks 2, and his own CD will be coming out later this fall. I was visiting his site, which again is myspace.com/DrDonHarvey. He's a gay man, and put a song that really touched me. And I'd like to run it for you. It touched me so deeply because it reminded me of so many folks that we have lost due to the AIDS epidemic. But this is a cowboy song, and the song is called Queer Cowboy Lament. And it is done by Don Harvey, and I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you stop by his site, Queer Cowboy Lament.
The sky, it is cloudless, and we're up at dawn. A cup of black coffee, and soon we'll be gone. A heart hard day of riding out under the sun. We're dusty and tired when evening comes. We sit by the fire, Will sings us a song. Sunny plays fiddle, we all sing along. Then under the blankets to ward off night's chill, it's sunny with Roger and I sleep with Will. I am a queer cowboy and I ride the range with Sonny and Roger and Will. My constant companions, we don't think it strange to sleep stretched out under the stars and dream wrapped in each other's arms.
That's Don Harvey doing Queer Cowboy Lament. I was really touched by that song. I guess there's a little cowboy hiding deep inside trying to get out. Thank you for that track. We did that with permission from Don. I want to tell you about this story. Government health officials are telling a gay group working on HIV issues to, quote, find something better to do. Happened in Kathmandu in July, just a few days ago. A Nepal's Blue Diamond Society was told to stop its care support and the outreach program in Dagat to look for something better to do. It's causing grave concern over the level of homophobia that exists in government officials in Nepal. It was about 2 months ago that BDS set up the fund, and it was basically paid for by Elton John's AIDS Foundation. And it was because of the number of increasing folks who are living with HIV in that area. It's far west of Nepal. And the plan was to coordinate and provide care services for folks with HIV and their partners. Now, since it started, a large number of people with HIV have been sent to Kathmandu for further support, for treatment. These people were being untreated and were at a hospice facility. Some of them are sent to a hospice facility. And this scheme does not discriminate on grounds of sexuality. And they work with MSM and MSW communities as well. I had to look that up. That's they don't do it the way we do it over here. MS, that's their abbreviation over there. MSM means men sleeping with men, and MSW means men who sleep with women, and also transgender groups. So that was working. It was working on all of those areas. Now, the public health officer said, the anus doesn't have any sexual tissues. That's why there is no chance, and I repeat that, no chance, of HIV-AIDS transmission. There are no MSM, MSW, or TG people in Dengati. I repeat that, no. So I believe that this care support program is absolutely unnecessary. Then, as the meeting went on, the person, the name is, it's difficult to pronounce, it's an Indian name, a Bengali name, Kathmandu name, I won't even try. They were told, this person said, if a program in Dengati, it will promote homosexuality that will pollute the entire society, and they didn't even stop there. They went on to say that people will copy this homosexual behavior. Remember, they've already said there aren't any. But people are going to copy this homosexual behavior, so there's no possibility at all for this program to continue. We want you to stop, and we want you to go find something else better to do. Then, after further discussion, the person said that they needed proof whether there were any HIV plus people in the community. And basically what they did was they summoned Elton John to the meeting. Now, you know, who knows if Elton John's going to go down. They were directed, they wanted him to come down to the person who was funding this and probably fuss at him for funding it. So that's what's going on in Nepal these days. The government is telling people to find something better to do who are attempting to help AIDS patients. Now, you think that that's happening only here? Oh, are there? Oh, no, no, no. The federal governments are yanking a gay information site here in the United States. It's less than 2 weeks after a conservative Christian organization complained. They complained to government officials about a federal website that contained health risks for gay men and lesbians. And guess what? Immediately after they complained, the information disappeared. But the government, our government, maintains that it was simply a coincidence. Guess who it was? Our dear friends, the Family Research Council. Yay! We talk about them almost every night. They sent a letter to Michael Levitt, who is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, complaining that the pages in the agency's Substance Abuse and Mental Services Administration website contained biased and politically charged language, such as condemnations of homophobia, imagine that, and condemnations of sexual prejudice. We can't have that. The website was is msha.gov, and it was taken offline. All the information that pertains to gay folks has been removed. That information had been online for almost 6 years, but it's gone now. The Family Research Council did not respond to requests for comments, but they did send a letter to Levitt at the government agency, the federal agency, to thank him for responding to the concerns, but of course they're denying that it had anything to do with them. He says, the Family Research Council President Tony Perkins said, I understand the need for special material addressing the substance abuse problems of these populations, and that even homosexual advocacy groups acknowledge the high rate of substance abuse within these groups than the general population at large. Well, I've said it before, you try growing up in this society as a gay or lesbian person, the kind of BS that happens to us, and see if you don't self-medicate. Jesus, these people never cease to amaze me. One of the organizations that has been removed from the website is outraged. They've been given three different answers on why the resources were removed. That was PFLAG, Parents, Family, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. The agency won't own up to removing that information. We have someone else saying the gay-related pages should have been removed years ago. It's an outrage. So there you have it. Not only in Nepal, go find something better to do. It's happening right here in the good old U.S. of A. All you have to do is be a right-wing jackass, complain to the government, and poof. Speaking of the web pages, here are the pages that were deleted. There was a page called What is the Meaning of LGBT? There was a page called Lesbian, a page called Gay, a page called Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment, Recovery, Prevention Resources, Club Drugs, Social Support, and Violence Prevention, Diversity, Hispanic and Latino Resources, Asian and Pacific Islander Wellness Site, or page within the GLBT area. And there is a page that they have overlooked, and it will be gone soon if you want to. The website is too long. I'm not even going to try to give it to you. But there is a PDF they forgot to delete. Yes, they forgot to remove a PDF. The PDF is called A Provider's Introduction to Substance Abuse Treatment for Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgendered Individuals. PDF file is still on the site, but if anybody's listening from the federal government tonight, and I know you are, it will be poofed by in the morning. Amazing stuff. There's another story I wanted to be sure and get to tonight. I'm just looking to see. It's not buried too far down into the stack. Here we go. Let's do this. Here's a good reason that you should support gay marriage. If you're not gay, you really, really ought to consider it. A man was ordered to keep paying alimony to his ex, who's now in a lesbian relationship. A judge has ordered a man to continue paying alimony to his ex-wife, even though she's registered with a domestic partnership with another woman and continues to use, or in fact, does now use, the other woman's last name. California marriage laws say that alimony ends when a former spouse remarries. And, of course, you would think that what they're telling us is that a civil union is the equivalent of marriage. But the judge doesn't think so. The judge is saying that basically their registered partnership is the same as just cohabitating. And the judge that Garber must indeed continue writing checks of $1,250 to his ex-wife, who is in a civil union in the state of California. It's a domestic partnership, they call it there. So there you go, folks. If one of those lesbians from that gang breaks in your door and kidnaps your wife and turns her over to the homosexual lifestyle and marries her, you still got to pay child support in California. So there's a reason that you ought to consider being for gay marriage. And let's see, the church has criticized the church and gay folks for torturing the Anglican Communion. Apparently there's much debate there about how badly the homosexual community has treated the Church of Ireland primate and how we're destroying the church. And, it just goes on and on. So anyway, just a pity that we're torturing the church. It never seems to occur to them that they are torturing themselves. By the way, I got a report from our good friend Glenn, who lives in San Diego, regarding the Pride Parade that happened this past weekend. If you recall, on Friday I told you that an airplane was about to fly over, pulling a sign that said something about www.helpforhomosexuals.com or some rigmarole. And Glenn reports that, yes, in fact, that airplane did fly over the Pride Parade. And apparently, though, the parade went off this year fairly well. No one was beaten to death with clubs afterwards, and that was all good. But it's interesting the way the Union Tribune reported it in the newspaper. As you know, if you've been in journalism, you know that by and large a lot of people will read the headlines and maybe the first paragraph scanning the newspaper. So in the tradition of promoting the stereotype, the headline reads, "Politicians and firefighters join bikers and drag queens." Okay, well, that pretty much tells us that we are just bikers and drag queens. And then the first paragraph reads, One wore nothing but leather briefs, sandals, and a wide grin. Others favored hot pink spandex with halter tops or barely below the waist dresses that kept needing to be tugged down. Okay, so if that's all you read, that's all you know, but you'd just be amazed. The tone of the article changes after the headline and the first paragraph. Thousands and thousands of people were there, and the huge majority of people were wearing things like T-shirts and denim jackets and sundresses and lots of plaid. And basically, the newspaper is referring to the huge majority of people there as just backyard barbecue people, just watching a parade, just like Ma and Pa Kettle. But you certainly wouldn't know that from reading the headlines. That goes back to the old days of whenever there was a child molestation case. If it was a man against a little girl, it would just maybe a little headline that said child molestation case. But if it was a man against a little boy, it was always homosexual, you know, huge headlines, front page, homosexual child molester. What a double standard. Boy, that stuff gets old after a while. By the way, there's a bid to silence the Turkish gay group. It's in Istanbul. They've been ordered before a judge to face violating Turkish laws by stating the organization represents GLBT folks. And that being the case, the Turkish government has told them to disband. And it's pretty much all she wrote there. I don't think there's very much leeway in Turkey. And as far as the we're concerned in this country, huge majority of the public favors expansion of the hate crimes law to include sexual orientation, which is something that's being fought tooth and nail by the Christian right. At this point in time of the overall population, 68% favor, including GLBT individuals in the hate crime law, and 27% oppose it. So it's pretty much down the lines of religion and politics, as you would expect. But as we discovered during Bob's show listing earlier, we really have no control if you're elected politicians. There's you can't vote them out. you can't go to court. All the papers are locked up. Kind of stuck with it. And Novartis saves the day. Novartis is the manufacturer of pharmaceuticals to treat AIDS and TB. And for years, India's pharmaceutical industry has produced and exported low-cost generic versions of these medications. But Novartis has brought a lawsuit. Now, Novartis is a gigantic corporation, billions of dollars in income. They brought a lawsuit against the Indian government that will kill these drugs for folks who live in these areas where they simply cannot afford this type of medication. And so way to go, Novartis. There's the CEO is Daniel Vasella, and various AIDS groups are contacting him to do something about this, to withdraw the lawsuit. There's a global organization called CARE. They're leading the humanitarian effort to do something about this. But the drug companies and the oil companies, if it weren't for those, we might have a much better world. Amazing, just amazing. Let's do this. This is kind of a sad story. I've been meaning to do this for several days, but we haven't had time to do this. It's a fellow named Ari, and he told his closest friends at school that he was gay when he was in the eighth grade, but he kept his quiet at home, and he kept his homosexuality hidden in the midst of a conservative evangelical Christian family, but then he just didn't want to hide it anymore. And it was in 2005. His parents were getting ready for a Super Bowl party at their home in Spring Lake, and Ari asked his mother if she had a couple of minutes to talk, and so she said, sure. And 2 hours later, they came out of the room having the conversations, and their lives were changed after that. Even when they were talking that day, Ari realized that things were never going to be the same again. In fact, the family themselves had to come out. This family, by the way, joined PFLAG, parents and friends, lesbians and gay. And now his father has a doctorate in psychology, and even before his son came out, he sort of figure that he was, and his son was, and he was becoming increasingly disturbed about church teaching, and he felt that the church was not doing the right thing by gay folks. The church revoked his license, his ministerial license, because his son was gay, and after that he felt a freedom that he had not felt in quite a while. The man has moved to a new church, and they're doing well there. So the PFLAG organization is helping them and counseling with them, and that's it affects the whole family. It really does. So it's life. It's hard to take. So, as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential, toll-free at 877, the number 4 head-on, and I'm your host, Peter Godbull, streaming exclusively on the Head-On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Great universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
And again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. Because that's what they are. Kick them in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
No, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show with your host, the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio. 11 a.m. to noon weekdays here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
And welcome back to the last half hour of Strictly Confidential for this evening. The telephone number is 877, the number 4 head on. I have a story here about a man named Brandon Kneifl. He's actually 20 years old, and he paid a huge price for being gay. When he was 14, his parents asked him if he was gay, and he's in Dearborn, Michigan at that time. And when he told them yes, they immediately wanted him to go get counseling. He was a popular student, and he held track records and field records from the high school he attended. And, you know, you'd expect it would finally be a knowledge that, you know, he was a gay person to his family, and that would solve some things regarding communication. But his family was humiliated, and they were repulsed by it. They told him that he could not run for student body president. He was going to run. There was a very good chance that he could have won. But they told him that he would negatively influence the other students. They didn't want him to play football for the same reasons, because he was gay. They thought that he would be a bad influence on the others. The parents were in fear, and he could see it. When he was 16, the tension came to a head, and they threw him out. They threw him out on the street. He went to school the next day still in pajamas. He lived with various friends' families until he graduated from high school with a 3.5 average. This is excellent for a guy that's been thrown out, I'd say. He couldn't afford college. He applied for an Army ROTC scholarship at the University of Michigan, but he turned it down. He relinquished it after the first semester and dropped out because he just couldn't live with being in the Army and being gay. He wasn't being true to himself, so he stood up for who he was. It took courage, and it really derailed his life for a long, long time. Organization in California called the Point Foundation. Now, what it is, it's the nation's largest publicly supported scholarship that grants scholarships to lesbians, gays, and bisexual students who are ending up in situations like this. The organization says that gay kids are 4.5 times more likely to skip school than their non-gay peers because they don't feel safe. And The man who heads the organization grew up in a Mormon family in Texas, and he was thrown out, so he has a deep understanding of what it's like to grow up in a household that says you're a bad influence on the other kids. So they are financing this scholarship for him. He is in college now. He is doing very well, and he has no ties with his family at this point in time. The organization called Point Foundation provides a scholarship to 84 to, well, this year it was 84, but as many as 100 people every year, and supports them until they graduate, and Kneifl is one of them. Been wanting to run this lesbian track for a week, and we haven't gotten around to it yet. This is one of our listeners, and the track is called Riverboat. It's by Holly Near.
Yes, there's mud just below that sparkling water. And it's soft, soft, even warm. Settled neath the river once in a storm. Mud just below that sparkling water. Once I had a daughter, strong and fine. Grew up, said she didn't want to be mine. I said I understood and I felt the same. Now she runs school for girls. Each one tougher than a redwood burl. Growing up stronger than the world. So I ain't gonna step down off of that riverboat. I ain't gonna step down off of that riverboat. Cause if I step down off of that riverboat, I don't think that I'm gonna float. Cause there's mud just below that sparkling water. Yes, there's mud just below that sparkling water. And it's soft, soft, even warm. Suddenly the river was a storm, mud just below the sparkling water. When, oh, when will I ever learn? It's not just fire that makes me burn. It's not just ice that cools my flavored skin. But if I give up, it'll cook me good. And that ain't the road to sisterhood. Where I'm going ain't the same.
gonna step down off of that river boat. Ain't gonna step down off of that river boat. 'Cause if I step down off of that river boat, I don't think that I'm gonna float. No, I ain't gonna step down off of that river boat. I ain't gonna step down off of that river boat. 'Cause if I step down off of that river boat,
Holly Near. Thank you for sending in that track, dear listener. And you know, in Nepal, they're saying go find something better to do. They're having the same reaction in Poland. State prosecutor has announced a government investigation of all Polish gay groups for illegal financing and criminal connections and pedophilia. It's a huge crackdown on groups. It's the latest series of a number of developments in Poland over the last few months. That shows how the continuing political homophobia of the country is creating a very gay, hostile environment for folks who live there. This is being led by a duo called the Terrible Twins. They are actually twin brothers. One is the president of the country, the other controls the Polish parliament. Doesn't sound a way of the direction that the Bush administration is headed in. I can just see it coming. We have caller Jim on the line. Welcome to Strictly Confidential, Jim. Good evening to you.
Good evening, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing fine this evening, thank you. It's good to hear from you.
And you too, sir. One thing I wanted to recommend, if you haven't seen it, a film called The Greg Louganis Story.
Oh, I've not seen that movie, thank you. Yes, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, very good. Talk about a trip through Sinai. This young man certainly took his and his career as an Olympic champion, and his personal life that followed after that. So he's written, I think, a book, maybe two, but anyway, at least one that I know of, and the book is very good. It's definitely.
It's been out for a while, but I never saw it. Hasn't it been out about at least 5 or 6 years, if I'm not mistaken?
Mm-hmm. It has.
Yeah, I somehow or another I've missed that one.
Well, I think you need to catch that one if you can.
That I shall surely do.
And there's one
that I will do.
It's a documentary, and I wanted to ask your guest. I think it's an email, but I don't think you didn't get it. But it's a documentary called Wigstock, the movie. Have you seen
it? I've seen it. It's fabulous.
Right, and that's on Tompkins Pier. But I understand they're not going to have that anymore.
Well, that's a shame. The movie, and another one along those lines, I believe, is Paris is Burning.
Right, about the balls and stuff like that. But
yeah, there's some fierce people.
Yeah, I know that the one of the leaders of that Wigstock thing was this drag queen named Lady Bunny, and there's one scene that she. Is calling the mayor of New York and asked if they could put a wig on the Statue of Liberty.
You know, Jim, it's that to mention her. I actually have attempted to contact her for an interview. I think she would be a hoot to have on the show. I've not heard back from her. I really should try that again. In fact, the problem was the email address that was on the Lady Bunny site, which if you haven't been there, you've got to go. For some reason, the email was bouncing. Maybe they're having a temporary problem with their mail server. I'm not sure, but thank you for reminding me of that. I really need to go and resend that. Maybe I can get it through now.
But the whole area that your guest is talking about, that's sort of been, like, changed. It was, you know, west of Soho or in the West Village, west of Halston Street, I believe, has become... it's really prime real estate territory for more upscale things. And artists have begun to move out. And, you know, it's not only the gay community, but also artists and people like that. They're being forced to move because of upgrades of business and stuff like that. That's part of New York real estate. You know. It's valuable property, and people begin to discover it. You know, it's lot of it left, so that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that group, they were really brave to have pulled themselves up from their bootstraps like that, fierce, that we talked to earlier. These are disadvantaged people of color from, you know, the wrong side of the river, you know, Newark and various areas of New Jersey and what have you. And they actually managed to pull this in. I just think that's remarkable. You don't hear success stories like that often.
This is true, but I saw a documentary about that part of New York recently, and it pointed out the fact that, things are changing, and businesses are moving in. They're going to try to improve that part of New York, or something. That's what they were saying. So I guess maybe that's having an impact on what your friend is talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No doubt, no doubt. And something about a university, I don't recall the name. She reminded me of the name, but you know how
NYU.
My mind is, right? And that's it, NYU, yes. And apparently they're right next door, and they're a large landowner in the area, and apparently that's having some sort of an influence, too.
Yeah, well, that's a very, very nice area for NYU. It almost looks like, you know, Georgetown, Washington. You know, it's a very, very elegant part of New York, as I remember. Used to do a lot of traveling up there in my younger days. So things have changed, what can I say?
Yes, they have, but the stories live on, don't they, Jim?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure there are a lot of people who can tell you a lot of things about that part of the city, but everything changes, but it always stays the same. So what can I say, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I wish you a good evening.
It does. Well, I'm glad you called. Thank you, Jim.
Good night, sir.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later, sir. That was caller Jim from an undisclosed location somewhere on the East Coast. I want to tell you about Gay Pride Month in Germany. It's an interesting story. July, this month, is Gay Pride Month. And some new documents have been revealed in Germany that has direct effect on it. It's about 55,000 gay men that met their deaths in Nazi Germany. There are going to be thousands and thousands of marchers that are going to take part in the Christopher Street Day Parade in Germany. They start outside of a landmark department store in downtown Hamburg, celebrating in this month, July. And you know, Hamburg has a gay mayor, and same-sex couples can form legal recognized unions. But not very many of the folks who are marching realize that these newly released documents are showing that the Gestapo staged a lightning raid on that same department store they're about to leave from. That's where the starting point is. 70 years ago this summer, they hauled off 40 store employees in suspicion of being homosexuals, and many of those people ended up in concentration. Gay Pride in a number of cities in Germany, it's huge, it's a jubilant, the parades, walking tours, and this new documents is a unpublicized dark history. At the German unification, hundreds and thousands of case histories were released after the unification, and historians have spent years sifting through them, and their findings are just now being published. And they've shocked even historians who knew that atrocities had occurred, and they were very surprised by the extent of these atrocities. Launched a systematic crackdown in the mid-30s, and they were actively entrapping gay men. The Nazis also created a vicious protection racket that allowed gay bars to the owners to remain in business on the condition that they handed over the names of customers on a regular basis. So that was a huge source of information for them. Landlords were bribed to inform on tenants, and if someone at work didn't like a bachelor coworker, all they had to do was go to the Gestapo and say, well, that person made a sexual advance, and the next day that coworker would be gone. Didn't matter at all if there was any truth to the allegations. And everyone knew that the ideology, of course, demanded procreation to produce the master race of a blonde and blue-eyed Aryans, and anyone who didn't get married was, of course, suspect to begin with. And So if you're gay, that just made it even worse. Being a bachelor automatically made you being suspicious of, made the Nazis suspicious. Gay men were offered an alternative there at the time. The alternative was voluntary castration, and they would give the men vague promises of leniency, at which point many of them agreed. They would undergo a botched, unsanitary operation, left them with oozing, putrid wounds, and the men would still end up in a concentration camp. The Pride Parade, it's a walking tour. It starts in front of the department store, and the Gestapo, it was in the summer of 1937, the Gestapo, the men burst in leather trench coats. They entered the store during business hours, and they rounded up 40 gay employees and hauled them off in vans, and the same spot where the gay pride rally is going to be held. What happened was they held them in what they called a protective custody, and for a short period of time, then transferred them to asylums for, quote, curative treatment, but eventually sentenced them all to concentration camps. Many people died. After the war was over, at the very end, many of the men were still wearing the pink triangles if they survived the concentration camps. And when they were released, the ones that did get away alive, the courts at that time upheld the Nazi-era laws for, quote, unnatural behavior, end quote. Now, this was despite the fact that all the other Nazi persecutions and convictions were dropped. They realized, of course, it was the Nazi style of getting rid of the Jews, the homosexuals, and any other group. But they kept the ones against homosexuals. They enforced those, but the others were dropped. So some men were still in prison, even in the 1950s, as late as the 1950s. It's called the Altar House, the department store that they're marching from, the Pride Parade leaves from. The documents show that the raids in Hamburg were repeated all throughout the Reich, and all in all, 1,000 gay men died at the hands of the Nazis, 7,000 of them in death camps, and one of the route takes them by a gay bar that was one of the gay bars that was shaken down and extorted by the Gestapo. There is a documented case that's been released. It's the story of Carl and Heinrich, Carl Burns and Heinrich Roth, and it's a sad story. They were a gay couple that ran an upscale men's clothing store in downtown Hamburg, right across the street from the Gestapo headquarters. And Burns and Roth were both arrested in 1940, and after months of pretrial detention, they were sent to a concentration camp. And by some miracle, they managed to survive until May 1945, when the camps were being liberated by the Allied forces. But it wasn't over for them yet. Auschwitz was liberated by the Red Army in 1945, and of course there were all the pictures of the skeletal remains. And so Heinrich Himmler issued an order for all the camp commanders to make sure that none of the camp inmates would ever fall into the hands of the Allied forces, who were rapidly coming along. And he didn't specify what they should do. He left that in the hands of commanders of the camps. And some of the camps began gassing all the surviving inmates. Others began evacuating the inmates. Well, Burns and Roth were forced to leave the camp. They were still alive near Hamburg, and forced to march to the Baltic Sea along with others that was 62 miles away to a converted cruise liner that was anchored there. This was in May of 45. The Allies were advancing on all fronts, and everybody knew the war was over, and all the inmates had heard the news, and the British forces had dropped leaflets saying that they would be in Hamburg in just hours. And yet, these gay men were sent on a death march to the sea. Stragglers were gunned, and others collapsed and died of exhaustion. Burns, one of the men, the lovers, died along the way. And Roth made it all the way to the Baltic Sea, where the converted cruise liner was waiting, and was herded aboard with thousands of other gay men and others. This was May of 1945. A British RAF was conducting air raids, and they're only a few miles away. But The Nazis told the RAF that this ship was actually it was an official ship, and it was being disguised as a refugee vessel because they wanted these men dead. So the RAF planes came in and bombed it and set it ablaze and sank it to the bottom. And the inmates who did manage to get into the water were either killed by bombs or the planes or a machine gun by the Gestapo as they tried to climb ashore. Only a handful made it to the shore, and Roth was not one of them. So that's the story of two gay men who are, this information has just now come out, who were there in Germany at the time of those atrocities. And this is, nonetheless, it's Gay Pride Month in Germany, and that's a shame. Boy, I tell you, this stuff takes its toll after a while, doesn't it? reading this stuff, going through it. You know, I was talking to you the other day, and I'll just do this briefly because we're coming up to the end of the show. But you know, this Matthew Shepard Act. I was telling you that the action alerts that are going out from the right wingers, they're just left and right. They're coming out. They're bringing up stories. Here's a story about apparently a 13-year-old boy. They're saying this 13-year-old boy did a sex toy among these two gay guys. It's a long story. Apparently the kid was gay and was hanging out with them. They were all on drugs. They were on meth, the whole bit. And yes, he did die when they were... The kid did die. It's tragic, really. But, of course, the way the right-wingers are presenting it was that, you know, it was a brutal murder. Everybody was in their right mind, you know. They're also saying that a woman's death at the hands of a gay guy were her fault. In other words, they're arguing against having the Matthew Shepard bill pass. They're saying that it was her fault. This was the woman, you remember, it was in news not long ago. The guy and this woman worked at a funeral parlor, and she kept going on and on and on and on about the God didn't love him and be gay and that he was going to go to hell. She just wouldn't let it go. She kept going on and on and on and on, day after day after day. And finally he snapped and he killed her. And certainly that's a tragedy, but at the same time, if there's someone listening who likes to go on and on and on, there are some of us who are pushed to the edge. I would recommend that you back off, bitch, because some of us aren't ready to snap. Yep. They're also quoting this sermon, this guy named Green Finland, I believe. Yeah, Sweden. Anyway, he was arrested. Apparently over there they have a hate speech. They're saying that this speech thing will apply to the U.S., which of course it does not. This specifically excludes speech, so you can still call us anything you want to. You just can't physically harm us. Well, that's not the case in Sweden. Anyway, this pastor preached a sermon that he described homosexuality as, quote, abominable, horrible, cancerous tumor of the body of society, perverts, the drive of the devil, strongest weapon against God. He went on and on and on and on and on. Oh, he covered step 15 in our gay pamphlet. He, at the end of it, he says, we cannot condemn these people. You know how that goes. But anyway, apparently he was arrested for hate speech. And so they're lifting that up as a example of how that will affect us here. Of course, in Sweden there is no ACLU to protect speech, and that is not the case. But I have the copy of the sermon. It's 15 pages long, and he does quote Scripture. They're saying that it will keep you from preaching Scripture. He does quote Scripture, but he goes way beyond Scripture. Way beyond Scripture. Well, that's going to close the show for this evening. I'm awfully glad that you could join us this evening. I hope to see you back tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we have Shara Greer from the organization that we've been trying to get here for quite a while. She is from the Service Members Legal Defense Network. She is one of the nation's leading experts on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Please stop by the website, strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and you can find out about all the guests and all the other hosts. And so here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...